order to fly to the Sea of Japan and shoot down any missiles the North Koreans launch.
Shoot down real missiles?
Taki's voice was breathless with surprise.
That's right, Harry said.
They can't order us, Delaney snapped, nearly shouting. We're civilians, for Christ's sake. They can't.
The North Koreans have missiles with nuclear warheads. They're getting set to fire them at American cities. We've got to stop them.
Now? Angel Reyes asked. On this flight?
Right.
How many missiles? Asked Rosenberg.
Don't know.
How far do we have to go?
As far as it takes, said Harry. So let's make sure that everything, I mean everything, is in perfect condition. We're heading into a real battle engagement.
Delaney looked stunned. He sagged back down onto his seat. Rosenberg, for once, didn't have a wisecrack to offer.
Let's get to work, Harry said.
Taki started for the forward hatch. Monk Delaney got to his feet and followed her. Harry and the two other men headed aft. The plane's engines throbbed smoothly. Harry barely felt any vibration as the jumbo jet lumbered through the stratosphere. The laser bay was crammed with pipes and wiring. Harry insisted on keeping the area as neat as possible, but there were always loops of wire festooned from the overhead, spare parts tucked here and there along the narrow walkway. The clutter was inevitable. Harry remembered the old maxim that a spick-and-span lab meant that no creative work was going on in it. Rosenberg and Reyes went about their tasks, barely saying a word. It's hit them hard, Harry realized. One minute we're on a routine test flight, and the next we're heading into a war. He wondered why he didn't feel excited or scared. He felt numb instead.
It's too much, he thought. It's just too fucking much.
Slowly, Harry walked the length of the laser bay, looking over every pipe, every wire, every weld on the tanks that held the volatile chemicals. Most of the laser itself was hidden behind all the plumbing. Only its active lasing cavity was clearly visible and available for immediate adjustment or repair. He stared at the lasing cavity. Built of thick slabs of solid copper with water-cooling channels drilled through them, that chamber was where the chemical energy of the combined iodine and oxygen was converted into megawatts of infrared energy. Leading into it was another copper section, built like a miniature wind tunnel. That's where the mixed chemicals roared through at supersonic speed, entered the laser cavity, and gave up their stored energy, then flowed out to be vented outside the plane. Harry remembered the first time the Anson scientists had shown a blueprint of the coil system to a group of visiting Air Force brass. One of the colonels stared at the wind tunnel section and shook his head.
"That's a lousy design for a rocket," he said. "You'll never get much thrust out of it."
The scientists laughed tolerantly and explained that the wind tunnel wasn't designed for thrust. It was intended to feed the iodine and oxygen into the chamber where the lasing action took place. Now, flying toward the Sea of Japan at more than 30,000 feet, heading into a possible war, Harry studied the laser assembly with the critical eye of a worried father. "It'll work," he told himself. "We'll make it work." But in his mind's eye, he saw the rig in the desert explode into white-hot flames, saw Quintana being roasted alive, felt the agony of his ribs cracking as he slammed against the back wall of the control room. "It should have been me, not Pete. I should have been out there. I should have checked the oxy line myself, made sure it was clean." He shook his head to clear the nightmare vision. "Well," Harry said to himself, "if she blows today, it